Hello. In our everyday conversations, we talk as though human beings should be held to moral account for at least some of their actions. This moral responsibility is typically taken to entail that a person has a certain level of control over the things that they do. In philosophical terms, this is called free will. But what happens when moral responsibility and free will start to come apart? In a world where nobody has control over their actions, what should we make of commonplace ethical notions such as culpability and blame? Testing questions indeed. But fear not, you're in the right place to hear some answers. It's my pleasure to introduce to you a brand new podcast called The Thirst, the only place to serve you knowledge on the rocks. My name is Edward Fraser, and sitting alongside me is my partner in crime, the man they call the Purple Dart, Mr. Robert Horwood.
Hello and good day to you all. I hope you're ready for your minds to be blown. Over the next coming weeks, Ed and I are going to take you on an epic journey through space and time. We're going to be talking about some of the most interesting philosophical puzzles around in the hope that we may arrive together at some sort of meaningful conclusion. As you may have gathered, this week's episode is about free will and moral responsibility. Well, I think we're ready, Ed, so take it away.
Well, I think it'd probably be best to start with defining the terms. I know a scientific man such as yourself would be uncomfortable if we didn't do that. Moral responsibility should be relatively obvious. I think the only thing we need to be careful of is distinguishing between moral responsibility and causal responsibility. So typically we don't take a human being to be morally responsible for everything he does. So say, for example, you were running for a bus and you tripped and fell over and knocked producer James into the road and he was unfortunately mauled by a lion that had escaped from a zoo. We probably wouldn't say you were morally responsible for that, even though you had caused a great travesty in the death of producer James.
Debatable.
Yeah, well, either way, we wouldn't probably say that you were morally responsible for it, even though you're causally responsible for it. So I think the important thing to bear in mind is we say human beings are morally responsible only for those actions that arise out of their free will. Mm. So that link's very important. Now, I set you some reading, so I'm I'm excited to see whether you've done anything. So I might hand free will over to you. Is that acceptable?
Well, as ever, Wikipedia has come through for me.
Yeah.
But laying that aside, from what I understand, free will is basically the complete opposite to fate.
Yeah.
They're kind of yin and yang.
Okay.
If that's what it is.
Yeah, that is what it is. Yeah, I think that's probably true. I think when you're dealing with issues of free will, there's two questions you should ask. First is, what is it to will something? And the second is, what is it to will something freely? Now, in terms of willing something, that's just the simple difference between you raising your arm and your arm raising as a result of a spasm. So in the first it seems that there's physical cause for your arm raising, whereas in the first, we'd say there's something more significant. You've got involved. It's something you did deliberately because you wanted to.
I just want to ask something already.
Yeah.
With the arm raising voluntarily and the arm raising through spasm,
yeah,
that surely creates a duality between your conscious and subconscious.
Yes, so it does. And in fact,
surely it's both still you, if you see what I mean.
In one case, it would be deliberate, and in the other, it would be indeliberate.
Yeah,
that's what I mean by you. Again, that's the point to raise, because yes, in a crass sense of the word, it is you, because you're the same biological being doing the same action.
Yeah.
But the important point is it seems that there's some sort of significant intervention that you as a deciding being make when you decide to raise your arm, as opposed to when your arm just raises as a result of an involuntary spasm.
Okay.
So that's a very good distinction to make. So that, I think, is the first crucial point, what it is to will something. It's to do something deliberately because you wanted to.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of willing something freely, that's slightly more difficult. Now, we talk as if we face an open future, that human beings could do whatever they like. And this conception of free will is thought of in the following terms. For every time I choose to do X, I could have chosen to do Y. It might be crucial just to get in mind the picture of the human being that we have now, which is one of a sort of agent that is capable of stepping outside of the natural order of his desires and his volitions and choosing from them at his leisure. So you often contrast human beings with animals. So you don't take an animal to be a moral agent. And that is because he doesn't really have a choice in what he does. So a cat chasing a mouse can't at any point be like, this isn't working out for me, I'm going to go and have a bowl of cereal. That just never happens. Whereas a human being is seen as being able to sort of stand from outside of that natural order
yeah.
and then intervene as and when he wants to do X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, it's about stepping aside from a situation, is it, and reflecting on it as,
yeah.
as almost a third party.
That's
and then wading back in to choose a appropriate decision.
That's exactly right. So that's the picture of the human being we have. Now, the reason I've picked this as our first topic is because we intuitively feel very strongly that that picture's right, that we have free will and moral responsibility. And these terms are of tremendous value to us when we're talking about human action. But it's relatively easy to introduce a challenge to both the concepts, which has proven to be a source of tremendous discomfort to philosophers for thousands of years. This challenge is called determinism, so that's where we'll turn next.
Carrying on from my extensive reading, Ed, from what I gather, determinism is a doctrine.
It is a doctrine, yes.
Yeah, where all events are already predetermined, if you see what I mean. So according to Newton's laws, say next year or 10 years time, what you're going to be eating on May the 10th has already been decided.
Yep. That's in a nutshell, very good. I mean, just to provide some further elucidation, the way they always used to describe it to us was in terms of a snooker table or a billiard table, because they're American.
It wouldn't make much good to me because you know how bad I am. I wouldn't be able to hit any of the balls anyway.
No, well, I don't think that matters. I mean, what is depressing is that if determinism's right, every time you went to hit a ball in a certain way, you would fail just as badly. But basically, the idea is, imagine you've got a snooker table with the balls arranged in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is, if you hit that ball with the same force, same direction, same everything, the balls would always end up in the same place. And the argument is that the laws of nature work along the same way. They're sort of set in stone, so to speak. So given the state of the universe at any one time, the laws of nature mean that there can only be one outcome at a later time. So Einstein put it brilliantly when he said, God does not play dice. So basically the idea is that human beings and their wills are part of this naturally determined order. So absolutely everything you do is determined to happen by factors outside of your control. In fact, it was determined to happen by the Big Bang, which is Newton's whole point.
Yeah.
Basically, theoretically, if determinism's right, it should be possible to predict with absolute certainty where every atom is going to be at a certain point. And this is all because the Big Bang started with a certain amount of force in a certain direction, etc. And now everything's just running off that. So the dilemma that determinism brings into the equation is that it robs a person of their ability to choose otherwise, which means there can be no such thing as free will, at least as we've conceived it. So without free will, people go from being moral agents to victims. So we're no longer freely choosing an action from a variety of alternatives. We actually only have one option, which has been predetermined. And the problem is that it doesn't seem fair to hold somebody morally accountable for an action that's outside of their control in such a way. So if you want to preserve our everyday system of assigning blame, then we need to act quickly. Now, I can see you're worried there, Rob. I can see it in your eyes. You want to ask me, what is this new devilry? But fear not, there are ways of dealing with this particular Balrog without getting hurt. So historically, philosophical responses to the determinism problem fall into two camps. One is incompatibilism, and the other is compatibilism. Do those terms mean anything to you?
Yeah, they do. As I said, extensive research has been done.
Very nice.
And by compatibilism, I understand that free will and determinism can exist in the similar belief without being logically incoherent.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, basically the idea is that for the incompatibilist, free will and determinism can't be true at the same time.
Yeah.
Whereas for the compatibilist, they can. So obviously for the incompatibilist, something has to go, either free will or determinism. So our first response to the problem might be to get rid of free will. Now this strikes me, I don't know about you, but this strikes me as quite a gung-ho approach, which will have catastrophic ramifications because...
Well, if I was going to get rid of one, no one wants to get rid of their free will.
Well, exactly.
And well, you think you wouldn't want to?
It's the concept. I mean, obviously, if determinism is true, we don't have free will. But I think you shouldn't try and get rid of a concept like free will lightly, because our image of ourselves as free agents that can be held morally accountable for our actions is so ingrained that you can't just possibly be like, oh, wow, I'm going to bend over and die. Because
well, it's also quite frightening to think that you have no control over your life. It's quite depressing.
Yeah, it is. So I think we might have to return to that issue if everything else has been exhausted. But for now, I think it's a rather reckless approach. rather foolish.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's leave that for now. Okay, so we'll go on to the second incompatibilist approach, which would be to deny determinism. And I can see that you're chomping at the bit to go with this. So as a scientific man, how do you feel about the deterministic problem we've set up here? Is it plausible?
Well, I'd have been waiting to say my piece quietly in the background, and you've now I think well, it's my time to shine.
I just thought I had to set it up for you. Look at me even now, hogging the limelight. I'll step back, I'll let you come in.
Well, basically, we established earlier that determinism says that every action has a set outcome, if you see what I mean.
A predetermined cause.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is what Einstein believed as well, as you said earlier.
God does not play dice.
Well, it seems on the quantum level that he does.
Oh! You just laid the smack down.
Science always brings the smack down, Ed. So, in a deterministic world, every event has a set outcome. Science's leading theories today suggest that on the tiny, 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 tiny scale, there is an amount of randomness.
You're talking about quantum mechanics.
I am indeed, yeah.
I'm glad we got that out of there. my question to you, Rob, would be what effect do you think that this element of randomness at the tiny level would have at the much larger level of human action? In other words, could it still be that even admitting a level of randomness into the system at this tiny level, a human's actions are still predetermined?
You've heard of the butterfly effect, I assume.
I have heard of both the film and the scientific
principle.
Yeah, the scientific principle, but I assume you're talking about the latter.
I am indeed.
Excellent.
I haven't seen the film, but I've heard it's not great.
Yep, so have I.
Anyway, back to the point.
Yeah.
About 14.8 billion years ago.
Just about.
Yeah.
Just plucked that out of nowhere.
Yeah, about 14.8 billion years ago, the universe sprung into existence.
Very nice.
At this early stage, would you agree that even a change on this tiny level would make a difference, have a knock-on effect to what we are today? Because essentially, we're all made up of atoms that, you know,
spouted out from
whatever.
Yeah, it would. I think that it would certainly be an issue for the determinist to admit that there is an element of randomness at the beginning, because the whole point of determinism is that you're flung on this path and have been so from
the beginning of time. Yeah.
My only issue with quantum mechanics versus determinism, sort of understanding of the world, is that it seems very difficult to rule either way.
I totally agree.
So to prove determinism, you'd have to wait till the ending of time and then be like, yeah, told you. And to disprove it, you'd have to be absolutely certain that there was an element of randomness. And as you will well know, the appearance of randomness does not indicate randomness itself.
Exactly. We'd need to test it, which would mean maybe creating a different dimension, but
On the slide. We'll leave that to someone else to sort out. We're just the ideas, man. We don't have to come up with these things ourselves. But I think even more than that, there seems to be, to bring it back to philosophy for a second, there seems to be an issue that even if determinism is wrong, it's actually worse off for us. Because in order to break the sort of deterministic cycle that we found ourselves deeply stuck in, you'd have to introduce an element of randomness, and it would be this randomness that made you act differently than you would have done otherwise. So even if determinism's wrong, we're still not acting of our own free will. It's randomness that's made us act differently. In fact, if anything, it's worse, because at least we knew that we
had something to blame.
We knew that we were screwed, but at least we knew that. Whereas now, I'm suddenly acting all randomly.
You've been flung out like a dangling like a tit in the
I feel like a lost boy, if I'm honest with you. A boy wandering lost in a man's game. So I think both of the incompatibilist responses we haven't agreed with here. So we haven't managed to deny free will. We haven't managed to deny determinism.
We've got nowhere.
No, we've got nowhere so far. Sorry for wasting your time. But there's one option left to us, which is compatibilism. Which is, again, the idea that we may be able to refine our notion of free will so that it allows for a person to remain in control of and morally responsible for some of their actions, even in a deterministic world. I'd just like to restate the problem if I could, Rob, because I heard a really horrible way of phrasing it that really hits home how powerful the argument is.
Go for it.
It goes as follows. Okay. You do the things that you do because of the way you are. In order to be responsible for the things that you do, you have to be responsible for the way that you are. You can't be responsible for the way that you are, therefore you can't be responsible for the things that you do. And as an example, you could imagine a child who'd been brought up by Nazi parents in a Nazi community who threw stones at a Jewish boy. Now, intuitively, it doesn't seem fair or right to blame him for his action, because it seems to me that he's not responsible for the way that he is. He's been brought up that way. And therefore, we can say that that action didn't arise from his free will.
It doesn't make his action right, though, does it?
It doesn't make
He comes to the wrong action.
He comes to the wrong action, but the idea would be that...
It's the way that he's come to it.
Exactly. Just like we had the example earlier of you falling over and knocking producer James into the path of the lion.
Tragedy.
Great tragedy. It would be something like that. That's how we describe it. So it's not an action that's arisen out of his free will. It's an action that's arisen out of something outside of his control. In this case, his upbringing.
Yeah.
And the idea would be that in a deterministic world, that sort of case is generalized to everybody. So, okay, in the Nazi case, it's very pronounced, and we can see clearly that the action's nothing to do with him. And it might seem to not be the case for the rest of us, but actually, we all act according to our characters, which are shaped by factors outside of our control, be it genes, be it your upbringing, be it where you happen to be born. And the reason that is so powerful as an idea is that it doesn't just strip away moral responsibility. It affects things like gratitude and praise. So it makes no sense for me to praise you for being an athletic god, because that's nothing that you could have decided. That's nothing you had any control over. And it's really deep rooting. So it can affect even things like being hardworking. That itself.
Yeah, that's just saying that you've got that as a result from the genes from your mother and father. It's nothing to do with you.
Exactly. And that really affects everything in life. For example, the way employment works. So you try to employ people on the basis of factors within their control, as in whether they're hardworking or not, as opposed to whether they're black.
Yeah, but this argument, again, says, you know, it's not your doing.
Exactly.
You haven't done that. That's just a product of what's come before you.
Exactly. So that is just to demonstrate what's on the table right now, what we have to defend. So we failed with both of our incompatibilist responses. So what we're trying to do now is accept the consequences of determinism, but find a way around, a way to retie the link between free will and moral responsibility. So I think by accepting the consequences of determinism, we have to dispense the idea of the free will being one that's able to choose otherwise, because clearly in a deterministic world, you can't.
Yeah.
So that in turn gets rid of the idea of the human being as being sort of outside of the causal chain, able to step in and alter his future.
Just what do you mean by the causal chain?
Well, remember we compared the human being to Felix, the friendly neighborhood cat.
Okay.
And where Felix does whatever his desires tell him and roams about chasing a mouse. Human beings, we said, are different, and we can sort of step out and choose between our desires at our leisure. So
it's basically just a series of events, and the outcome at the end of it, is that what you're saying?
I'm basically saying that a human being faces the same sort of choice that a cat does, i.e. none. Basically, okay. He has various alternatives presented to him. He can choose from a more complicated range of things. So I could choose to not chase a mouse and to have a bowl of cereal instead. But just because I've got more complicated choices by virtue of the being
more
I am,
free
to choose between them. Exactly. So we've got rid of that idea of the human being.
I just wanted to clear that up.
No, that's fine. That's what you're here to do, Rob. and thank God you are, quite frankly. Otherwise, I'd be rambling on for 40 minutes about God knows what. So we've got rid of those two crucial elements to our original conception of free will. So the question now is, what would our new conception, the one we're trying to fit in with determinism, look like? And I would say that simply a free will is one that gets its way. So you remember how we said earlier that it didn't seem right to say that you freely raised your arm just because you willed it, if you couldn't have done otherwise.
Yeah.
Now I'm saying, in response to the deterministic challenge, it doesn't matter whether or not you did X because of the way that you are or because of the way the universe was mm-hmm. aligned. And it doesn't matter whether you did X and you couldn't have done Y. So long as you wanted to do X, we can say that you did it of your own free will and therefore also that you're responsible for it.
And that's a nice way to think about things, to be honest, isn't it? I mean, as I said earlier, you don't want everything in your whole life to be laid out in front of you, unable to change. But the illusion, if you will, of thinking about doing things almost gives you freedom in that sense. And I think that's what you're, the point that you're trying to come to.
Well, I'm trying to say that our conception of free will as we have it, as we think of ourselves, is wrong. But not to fear, because we can still tie down a person to their actions via a different conception of free will. Because I think that's the main... There's two main issues with that determinism raises. The first is that we take ourselves to be free agents.
Yeah.
And determinism really shocks that. And the second is that we have moral responsibility. We take people to have moral responsibility because they're free agents. If you get rid of free will and suddenly you've got a world where people can't be held accountable for their actions, what I'm saying is that, yes, I'm accepting the first horn of the problem. I'm saying, yes, our picture of ourselves as free agents is wrong, at least in the sense we've discussed. But we are still free in a real sense. That means that we can still be responsible for our actions, so thereby stopping the chaos that would follow if we didn't manage to find a compatible definition for free will.
And it's a especially important theory when it comes to things like justice and the law.
Of course, that's the very problem. How is it fair to hold someone accountable for an action that's outside of their control? Mm. If determinism's right, all of our actions are outside of our control, in as much as they were always going to be, we were always going to make them. The way I would demonstrate an example of this free will of the new kind I'm talking, is imagine a comparison with an example of coercion. So if a man puts a gun to your head and says he'll shoot you if you don't kill me, we can say that your action wasn't free. Intuitively, if on the other hand you decide to kill me yourself when they say it was. Now, importantly, this intuition that the one action was free and the other wasn't still holds, I think, within a deterministic world. So we'd still say that even if all of your actions were predetermined, if I put a gun to your head and said do this, you'd be less free than if I didn't.
Yeah,
at least I think that's the intuition. So I think
no one wants to die.
No one wants to die. So I think basically, I think that distinction that I just made with that example demonstrates that intuitively we can still assign responsibility to some of our actions, even if determinism is true. And this is because we can find a conception of free will that's compatible.
It's a little bit of a cop-out, though, isn't it, Ed? Because, I mean, philosophy, like science, is trying to unpin things and define them in a more eloquent way.
Yeah.
So to smash these two theories together...
It is a cop-out, Rob, but if I'm honest with you, 2,000 years of philosophy's best thought has managed nothing better. So for me to stand up and tell you that there's no issue and that I've solved it would be quite a big ask.
I'm a little bit disappointed. I did expect more of you, but if you say this is what the way it's going to be, then...
That's it, I'm afraid. That's all I can do for you. Okay, guys, I can tell from producer James's terrible flailings that it's time to wrap this up and our time together has come to an end today.
Like a tired child. He needs to go home and be put to bed, Ed.
He does. So don't worry if you're feeling dizzy, people. You're running with the big dogs now, and that's just what happens. Seriously, though, I'm sure there's some people out there who might have been worried by what we've talked about today, by the threat of determinism, and who remain unconvinced by our response to the challenge. Indeed, I remain unconvinced myself. As you pointed out, it's a bit of a cop-out. An issue that I did think about is what to do with the term moral responsibility. Now that we've said there's no difference between humans and animals in terms of their actions, I mean, after all, we don't hold a lion morally responsible for slaying his rival. So why should we hold a human to account?
Mm-hmm, good point.
We haven't got time to do justice to this issue, but I think it would be an interesting topic to debate. So please do get involved on Twitter, Facebook, or on our website, with details coming up in a moment, if you want to make your feelings heard on this or on any issue we've raised today. My final thought on the matter is something that producer James whispered to me as we entered the room. And he seems to be of the persuasion that this entire debate was meaningless. Which I wish he hadn't told me just as we settled down to do it.
Yeah, slightly disconcerting.
Indeed. And his point is that even if we manage to persuade people in this fine room, if we manage to persuade people that determinism is the case... outside of the room, it's impossible to act as if it is anyway. We will always think of ourselves as beings with free will, capacity to choose otherwise. And so the entire debate, no matter what we establish, is relatively fruitless in the real world.
Yeah, basically saying whatever, mate.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think he's got a good point, to be honest with you. And so for all of you out there who are really quite worried and distressed about determinism, I'd say to you this. If you truly believed in determinism, it would make no sense for you to feel gratitude or resentment, because gratitude and resentment presuppose free will. I don't think you can help believing in gratitude or resentment, which means that whatever we said in this last 20 minutes, you can't help believing in free will. Get over it.
Well done, Ed. Give yourself a pat on the back.
Thank you.
You've just gone toe-to-toe with knowledge and come out the victor.
Thank you.
If you want to find out any more of what we've been speaking about today, for example, a bit more in-depth into the quantum mechanics, then please visit our website, which is www.thethirstpodcast.wordpress.com, or drop us an email at thethirstpodcast@gmail.com. Next week, we're going to be talking about David Hume's problem of induction. So look forward to that one. We'd like to thank you all for listening, although, as we've heard, you probably couldn't have chosen otherwise. We hope you've enjoyed the show, although, again, you couldn't have helped that. Or could you? Stay thirsty, everyone.
I always do.